What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm King Cass, one of your hosts, joined by my good friend, the co-host extraordinaire, the one, the great Jay Veazey. What is up?
I'd like to thank everybody for taking time off from counting Iowa caucus votes to listen to our show. We know that you guys are struggling right now. We hope you guys get it together.
That's a
baseball.
God, why'd you start there? All right. You know what? Let's go into something that might be a little bit more mind blowing. We got some breaking news from our producer DJ M about the Dodgers making a couple of acquisitions here.
Yeah. Mookie Betts is going to the Dodgers from the Red Sox. And also David Price is also involved in the deal, but he might be going to a third team. But right now, all the baseball writers of America are trying to figure this out. But it very much looks like the Red Sox, 2 years away from a World Series victory, are kind of blowing things up. I think we...
Very reminiscent of the Tigers post-Dave Dombrowski as well. Very reminiscent.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to bring up Dave Dombrowski because they got rid of him in the middle of the season, which was a little bit odd. And then they fired manager Alex Cora over the sign-stealing scandal. That was fallout from that. So now, I mean, the front office, the manager is gone. And it just looks like, okay, time to rebuild, time to get rid of everybody, including, a couple of the best players in baseball. So, it's pretty awesome that the Dodgers are getting him. In a way, it's kind of, just for Dodgers fans in general, because I feel like, my coworker Joe, especially, who is always talking about, like, oh, well, the Dodgers didn't really do anything this offseason. They should be spending more. They should be going out and getting better players. And it looks like this time the Dodgers are buyers in the trade market. And they got a good player in Mookie Betts.
Mm-hmm. I haven't been paying enough attention to baseball, but I know Mookie Betts is a really good player. I don't know much about David Price. I've heard his name, but other than that, I don't know much about him.
But he's an ace level pitcher.
Okay, guys. Okay. David Price, Cy Young a winner, ace starting pitcher, your $30 million starting pitcher type. For Boston, originally made his name in Tampa Bay, had a cup of coffee with the Tigers as well before going to Boston. He did really well for them. Mookie Betts, MVP, former MVP, considered by many to be the 1B to Mike Trout's 1A in Major League Baseball currently. So these are two legitimately elite top tier elite talents at their respective positions, going at least one of them to the Los Angeles Dodgers. So the Dodgers are going for it. Yes. They have their window and they are going all in.
Yeah. Now that nobody can steal their signs anymore, they're going for it. They got screwed over by that scandal probably more than anybody. So let's see what they can do without the Astros in the way.
Moving on from there, we got a little bit of tennis news. We kind of made a little bit of jokes about the Australian Open, saying that we wouldn't care unless Serena made it anywhere. And she went out relatively early, but Novak Djokovic wins his 8th Australian Open.
That's a record, or it extended his own record. The next closest is 6, I believe. So he won that over Dominic Thiem in 5 sets. I think Sofia Kenin was the winner on the women's side, and that was her first Grand Slam victory ever. So
awesome.
I think a lot of things are changing up in women's tennis, because it's like you kind of had a dominant force in Serena for a long time. And then a kind of a resurgence from her last year, even though she didn't win any of the Grand Slams. But then it's like a lot of new young talent. We've talked about Naomi Osaka and Coco Gauff, and then Sophia Kennan is just another one of them, also an American. A lot of new young talent. Hopefully, some of this kind of the shakeup results in a couple stars coming out of this. So you can kind of get to like the men's side where there's kind of four stars that have been on top for a long time, and that that tennis can build around. So that would be really nice to see. And maybe Sophia Kennan is one of them.
I think so. At least from the highlights that I saw, right? I don't know much about her as a player, but from the highlights I saw, she looks like a good, smart player.
Kaz is locked in this week, folks. He's locked in.
Well, okay. This is all, these games are happening in Australia. So it's kind of hard for any of us to tune in. These matches are on really, really early in the morning.
Yeah.
I think I've watched the Australian Open final maybe once in my life.
I've watched it two or three times in my life. So I can say that. But the thing is, I've also been trying to lock in on hockey, and I've been trying to pay attention to the Devils, who aren't doing hot this year. All right, we're not doing great, but I'm just trying to get more acclimated to the game of hockey. I've actually been watching hockey games, but that's not what we're talking about next. Next up on the docket, we got basketball and some basketball news. Obviously, one of the big things on the wait and see board here in the Sports Odds and Ends offices is the NBA China fallout. And it's had some dealings, but not much.
Yeah, I mean, we are talking like hundreds of millions of dollars, which seems like a lot, but ultimately it's had little to no effect on the salary cap for next year. So I think for us as basketball fans, that's what we would be most concerned about, because that affects whether your team's long-term plans can still happen. If you spread out $200 million in losses over 30 teams, that's it's kind of nothing. That means, maybe the price of hot dogs goes up or something. but that doesn't mean they can't go out and go get.
They're
a big
already
freak.
Expensive as it is.
Yeah. So it's just 3% of total revenue of the entire league, and so 50% of that revenue goes towards players. So you cut that 3% kind of in half. And then it barely affects the salary cap. We've saw for the wait and see part. And it looks like we thought it could have been a bigger deal, and it ended up being not as big a deal. Maybe long term that changes, but it looks like the NBA kind of took the stance of like, let's just keep kind of pushing this off. And actually, that's maybe doing them a disservice, because they did take Adam Silver did take a surprisingly strong stance on like, we're going to let our people say whatever they want. And if it costs us money, then whatever. And then it ended up not costing that much money in the long run. So I think he's managed to maintain the goodwill among NBA players, at least when it comes to freedom of speech. And it looks like the controversy is kind of blown over in China, although I don't know if they've ever or will ever forgive the Houston Rockets. But at the very least, they're going to keep watching other games.
A couple of other things to take note of. Well, OK, one thing to take note of, one thing for Kaz to get wordy about, the trade deadline is coming up. So kind of start looking at your teams and thinking about who should stay, who should go. Not that you have a say in it. Speaking of people who are on the go, the Knicks have decided to part ways with President of Operations Steve Mills.
Yeah. So Steve Mills and Scott Perry kind of run the front office in that organization. And I think both of them have kind of taken the recent blame, at least when people are not blaming James Dolan.
Wait, so, Are there moments where we don't blame him?
Well, okay, so it's like when you have like residual blame to throw around, then then those get lobbed at Steve Mills and Scott Perry. So for some reason, only one of them is gone. And it's Steve Mills. Scott Perry is going to stick around at least for a while. It looks like the Knicks want to hire somebody to work above Scott Perry. The name that still keeps getting thrown around is Masai Ujiri. Who knows whether he wants to give up his cushy job in Toronto to go work for the Knicks. But it's the sort of position where nobody's going to blame you that much if you fail, but it will be a big challenge, and maybe he's interested in the challenge of turning that team around.
The problem is, right, I feel like that team is in a spotlight of obvious failure, right? Like, and by that, I mean, it's one of those things where I feel like, almost to a certain degree, it doesn't matter who goes there. And this could be, take it with a grain of salt, this could just be my mad little boy heart who's just mad at the ownership of the Knicks. But I feel like it's a situation where it's just a stop loss. Like, you're just going to go there. You're not going to actually be able to do anything because your hands are going to be tied. You're going to have to give in to the will of the demands of the ownership, but they're always going to throw you in front of the bus. Always. And I just feel like it's not worth it. I feel like it's an opportunity that at some point used to be worth it, but I don't think it's worth it anymore.
Yeah. So the other strategy that kind of that's been thrown around a little bit is the idea that the Knicks might go for a former agent to take the reins. That's kind of because Rob Pelinka used to be Kobe's agent and he took the reins in LA. I think Bob Myers used to be an agent and he's had a lot of success with the Warriors. I don't know if using those two guys as examples is necessarily the best because they seem to be on opposite ends of the spectrum. The Lakers are doing okay, but I don't know if that's because of Rob Pelinka or that's just because they are in Los Angeles and LeBron just wanted to go there anyways. And Anthony Davis just wanted to go there anyways and was willing to,
yeah, sure,
to go scorched earth to get there. So, I mean, maybe that's the same kind of situation with the city of New York. But as we saw last summer, two players very much wanted to go to New York and they opted to go to the other New York team, specifically to avoid the Knicks. So I guess maybe there's only so many spots in New York available. So it's...
I also think it's one of those things when your ownership starts to have that much of a bad rap, right? It's hard to court people. You know what I mean? Like, it's just hard to like get people on board for something like that. I think because you have to get them to want to come there with the media thing that New York is in the first place. And then two, you have to sell somebody on the fact that the ownership isn't as bad as it is shown, as it is presented to be in the media and by the fandom to a potential player. So, yeah. That's,
and maybe that's a hard take. Maybe it takes just a couple good decisions by the front office to turn that around. I feel like the appeal of being in New York and the endorsement opportunities you can get from being in New York and reaching that sheer number of fans offsets the media hellscape. But then you still have to worry about like, is this a place where I can actually find success or is this a place where I'm just asking people to hate me in 3 years? And I think that's something every player that signs with them is going to have to worry about. All right. Moving on, the All-Star game is coming up. So usually we do the trade deadline, or at least since last year, it's been the trade deadline and then the All-Star game coming up. And so it looks like we've got a caller on the line who is looking to talk about the NBA changing up its All-Star game rules.
Yeah, guys, we actually have Pedro from Miami who's calling in. He has some thoughts on the All-Star game.
Hello. Am I on?
You're on.
Guys. Good morning, guys. My name is Petey. Long-time listener, first-time caller. And I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts on the NBA changing the rules of the All-Star game to kind of be more like an Elam ending rule set. I think it's very interesting, and I think the tribute to Kobe Bryant is a really cool aspect to it, especially the charity aspect to the previous quarters, like the first, second, third quarters. I was just wondering what you guys thought about it. Also, if you guys had any thoughts on Jimmy Butler not being named starter due to the rest of the NBA's players being petty ass bitches. That's all. Thank you guys. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you guys again.
All right. Thanks, Petey. So you threw out a lot of stuff there, but yeah, they are changing the All-Star game format to be, they're kind of splitting the four quarters into each own like individual segment.
So it's basically three 12-minute games.
Yeah.
And then kind of a weird all-out fourth quarter thing.
So that's the Elam ending that that Petey was talking about. So for each winner of the quarter will win $100,000 for their charity. And then for the fourth quarter, they are going to total up all the scores. They're going to add 24 to the top score, so that the 24 being in honor of Kobe Bryant, and then the winner will be the first team to get to that top score plus 24. So that's the Elam ending, the Elam style ending, which is used in a basketball tournament called the basketball tournament. I don't know why they chose such a generic name for that, but in that tournament they add 8 points to the final score, and so there's no clock for the last quarter. Essentially, it's just whoever gets to that score first, which is an interesting way to play it out. I think they're trying to make the overall game more competitive. If you give like nice incremental goals in between, you can maybe motivate players to actually play the game during the early parts of the game rather than just take it seriously at the end. Because for the last couple of years, the All-Star game has turned into, in a way, just kind of a mini dunk contest. Nobody's playing defense. Nobody's doing anything. And naturally everybody's just wanting to avoid injury, but, there's kind of nothing at stake in the All-Star game. Everybody's friends with each other now. Nobody really hates each other. So nobody cared that much about bragging rights. This will give them something else in between to play for, I think. I do think the rules are kind of convoluted.
I think this is interesting. I think something that would make it fun and kind of circusy in a sense is give people that reason to show off one way or the other, right? Like either defensively or offensively. Like I think there are ways in which that can be done. Do I know all of them? No. But I think there are interesting things that they could possibly do that make it so that, like you said, right? So one, obviously you want people to be careful and not injure themselves. So you don't want them to necessarily go all out, but you want them to make it an exhibition, right? You want them to come out there and kind of show off to a certain degree. And I think there are possible ways to do that by maybe adding points, like, for certain skills. Like, oh, you get a block. Like, that's you know, maybe 1 point or something like that. Or, like, a three-pointer from somewhere abnormal on the court is worth more than three. And maybe, like, add things like that that give guys more incentive to maybe go for those things, to go for defensive plays, go for things like that, and give it just more points so that the points to a certain degree don't matter. Because then it's one, you're going to have more fun in doing these more ridiculous things, trying more things, but in a sense that it's still safe, it's still fun, both sides are having fun, and it's still a game in a sense.
Yeah. And not just a dunk contest where a game broke out.
Question from the production, which was pretty much the next thing we were going to move to, but DGM says, who are the starters? Which actually is a very interesting thing too, because one of the things Petey brought up was Jimmy Butler not getting the start for the side that he's on. So yeah. For the Eastern All-Stars, you have Giannis at captain, which I think is very interesting. But like I said, he is pretty much one of the best players to enter the NBA ever. You got Giannis, you got Joel Embiid, Kemba Walker, Trae Young, and Pascal.
From Toronto. Who's had like a really, he was most improved player last year, and and kind of now that Kawhi Leonard's left, he's taken on much of the load himself, and he's moved himself into that lead role for Toronto. So that's the Eastern Conference. The Western Conference is captained by LeBron James, and so I think these two were the captains 2 years ago. Last year, I think it was Giannis and Steph Curry, since LeBron, I think, was injured at the time. LeBron James, captain, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, Luka Doncic, and James Harden are starting. One interesting thing about the starters, all of them, you got Trae Young and Luka Doncic, who were drafted last year, this their second year, and both of them are starting this year. So that's something nice for the league regarding its future. And especially that, like, you've got two good guys in both conferences. So that's a good sign for conference balance in the future. To address Petey's point, there's kind of a waiting between the votings between fans, players, and the media. And I forgot what the actual breakdown is, but one of those three categories makes up 50% of the score, and then I think the other two make up 25% each. So Jimmy Butler placed fourth in the fan rank, sixth in the player rank, and third in the media rank among front court players, and the top three end up as the starters. Mm-hmm. So what Petey is referring to is the fact that Jimmy Butler got a significantly lower player score than he did a fan score and a media rank score, and so I think that's that is largely due to the fact that a lot of the other players just don't like him, which I think you can say part of that is self-inflicted, but you could also make the argument that that shouldn't factor into the voting mm-hmm. as much, but it's going to factor in anyways.
Honestly, maybe Jimmy Butler's just a dickhead. Maybe that's it.
He is. And he might deserve to start anyways. I mean, because the Miami Heat are actually doing incredibly well and a lot better than we thought they would. Maybe not a lot better, but better than we thought they would. And I think Jimmy Butler is a big part of that. So he should kind of get some credit for that, I think.
You know what I think part of it is, right? I think to a certain degree, and stop me if I'm overstepping my boundaries, Jimmy Butler as a player, as a player personality, not in play like style, reminds me of Reggie Miller, right? Good player, lot of skill, also big.
Bit of a dickhead.
But on the court, right? On the court and to his fellow colleagues, a fucking asshole. But off the court, I think Jimmy Butler is a genuinely kind of chill, nice guy who's a little weird. But on the court, a dickhead.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, on the court, he was a dickhead and moved several teams. So a lot, he got to have a lot more teammates experience the dickheadedness, rather, mm-hmm. whereas Reggie Miller played for the same team his entire career. So... we saw Jimmy Butler kind of overstay his welcome in Chicago. Then he got traded to Minnesota, and we covered that controversy extensively. And then he got traded to Philadelphia. And then instead of re-signing there, he managed to work his way to Miami. And where it seems like he's had no issues with his Miami teammates. Your reputation kind of follows you a little bit. And if you leave, somewhat scorched earth in your wake everywhere you go, I think that's going to have effects, and maybe it should matter to whether you're an all-star starter or not. Maybe it shouldn't matter. I don't think all-star starter is that big a deal. I don't know if anybody's contracts are structured where they don't get bonuses if they're not all-star starters. I think most of those bonuses are structured around whether you make the all-NBA team or not. So overall, I don't think it maybe it's petty, but I don't think it's that big a deal. And personally, though, I think I would like to see like the more entertaining players get to start. So Jimmy Butler is pretty high on that list for me. So I guess I would rather see him. But then again, I don't watch the All-Star game specifically because of all the reasons that I mentioned before. I watch the other stuff. And in regarding all the other sports as All-Star games, I've gone on record as saying I want to see them do anything except play the sport that they've been playing all year.
I think football became kind of the most interesting thing this year, watching them play dodgeball and even some of the skills things were football tailored, but they were so fun because they were almost carnival like, right? You
know, like, I want to watch Jimmy Butler play dodgeball because he is aiming at everybody's head. He's that guy.
Yeah. Because he's a dickhead.
All right. Speaking of football, we got a little bit of football to talk about in our roundup. I mean, we have a lot of football to talk about.
And guys, the baseball hot stove is nuclear. Like, this is the hottest baseball offseason in years. It's looking like it might be the Minnesota Twins, who really surged in the American League last year. That is the third team in this trade for Mookie Betts going to the Dodgers, and depending on where David Price might go. And they will be sending a starting pitcher, Kenta Maeda, to the Minnesota Twins. That is what it's looking like per Jeff Passan at ESPN, but still ongoing right now with a couple of things from the Minnesota Twins. We're still looking into it. It's still going on.
Okay, so instead of a fire sale in Boston, it's more of a self-inflicted explosion at this point.
So real quick, let's talk about some football stuff. Let's just kind of get some of the basic football things out of the way. Lamar Jackson, named regular season MVP. Deserved?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been standing him all year. So, yep, okay. Definitely deserved.
Vernon Davis has decided to hang it up and retire from the NFL. I think that's a good one. I think that's a player who's had a lot of good years, has made a significant name for himself, can probably do some good desk work from here if he wants to, or just kind of hang it up and just relax, write a book.
Yeah, that could work. Tom Brady is not retiring. He threw everybody into a frenzy earlier. Boys, by
hot take time.
Yeah.
Yes. Where do you think Tom Brady's going to be playing next year?
Oh, man. Hold on. I need to check one thing. Where are we at? So we're at 42, if I remember correctly, right? Tom's whole thing was he wanted to play until he was 40, at least, right?
So he's 42 now. And he said 45. He said 45.
Oh, 45? Fuck. Okay. I think if he doesn't big dick Belichick again, as he has done the past, what, how many years has he big dick Belichick and decided to stay?
There was a story over the weekend that said that the Patriots are willing to give Tom Brady $30 million a year.
Yeah, I say either Denver, because I don't necessarily see him going to a team where he'd have to play the Patriots a lot. I think actually, I don't know, man, because Tom's weird, right? He does have a really big competitive streak sometimes. I'm going to say Denver or
Kaz is waffling. Kaz is waffling.
Denver or he stays.
I'm going to say Tampa Bay.
God.
He's going to replace Jameis Winston and all of Jameis Winston's interceptions, and those are going to turn into non-interceptions, and they are going to go, they're going to make a resurgence.
He also threw a lot of touchdowns, though.
But he's going to throw for 30 touchdowns without the 30 interceptions. They're going to do a documentary about it. It's going to be called 30 Without 30. And whenever the Buccaneers make a run towards the Super Bowl, it's with an aging quarterback. Last time they did it with Brad Johnson. This time they'll do it with Tom Brady.
All right.
The narratives, they're there.
And I say Tom and Giselle will be heading out west and going to play for the Los Angeles Chargers.
All right. I think that's where the smart money is.
Other than that, a little bit of non-NFL news. The XFL will be starting this week. Are we excited?
I'm excited.
Oh, yeah.
For the gimmicks.
Why are you excited for this?
Two forward passes. That's my excited. Like, I'm just a nerd about rules and rule changes and like if you change one thing, like how does it affect the way people play? I think this is maybe a little dramatic, but I'm going to say that the XFL and the experimentation that they're doing is extremely important for the long-term survival of football as a sport. It's, you know, if we talk about like, oh, 30 years from now, nobody's going to want their kids to play football. Maybe some of these rule changes might change that. So we'll see how well it works. We'll see if it makes an exciting game. We'll see if the rule changes, the interest in the rule changes makes up for the lack of talent. Yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait and see on it. But in order to wait and see, we have to see. So I'm gonna see. I'm at least gonna follow it on Twitter to see highlights.
All right, and then obviously the big thing coming out of the week, we had the Super Bowl. JVZ, I'm sorry, but the Chiefs did win that game, to 31-20. So you had the note down here that it was overall a good game.
Yeah. Do you agree with that?
I say it was better than last year.
Okay. Yeah. I think we can all agree on that.
I think one, it was definitely better than last year. Two, I think it had its flares of interest enough that made it a game. It made it a game worth paying attention to, right? Because you saw these teams kind of feel each other out in the first quarter, and then the San Francisco kind of start to take control of the field with their defense, as I figured they would. I always said San Francisco does have a really good defense. One of the other things I got asked a lot at the Super Bowl party that I went to watch the game was, how do I feel about Jimmy G? And once again, it's no disrespect to you, JVZ, but I said, I think he is a serviceable quarterback. I don't think he is necessarily the first guy you go for, because I think he is somewhat easy to read. But that game kind of showed off Jimmy G's kind of somewhat intelligence to read defenses and things like that, whereas Patrick Mahomes struggled through most of that game to be able to read that defense and made some questionable decisions. But I think in the end, the chosen one, as DJM has called him, showed what he could do, and his team at that, staying in it when they were down 20-10, to come back and kind of put it together, and I think put the 49ers on their heels, which caused the 49ers to start to make some mistakes.
Yeah, and I think you could call it kind of two separate games. Like you said, feeling out period, and then defensive, I don't want to say domination, but it's, you know, we had said going into this game, like if the 49ers can get to the quarterback, if they can get to Patrick Mahomes and make life difficult for him, that's the same formula that we've seen for every time that we've seen a high powered defense take down a high powered offense in the Super Bowl. So like I was excited the whole way. Like, it looked like they were doing it. They were getting to the quarterback. They were making Mahomes frustrated. They were forcing him into mistakes. Uncharacteristic mistakes. He had two interceptions
going. There was at some point in this game, my man threw a jump shot.
Yes. And that's it, part of that's just nerves. He's a young guy. And so is Jimmy Garoppolo. Mahomes is a two-sport athlete, not a basketballer, but he did get drafted by the Detroit Tigers. They flustered him, and but as we also said on the show, it only takes like 5 minutes or so for him to get it together, and once he does, then he could drop 30 on you in an instant. And he only needed 10. They were only down 10. They were only down 10, and they ended up scoring 21 straight. Some of that was by the defense, but when the Chiefs needed a big play, Patrick Mahomes made a big play. He made a big throw to Tyreek Hill, I think on 3rd and 15 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And if he hadn't made that, I think we'd be talking about a different result in this game. So the stakes are so high in the Super Bowl. An entire season's work of work can come down to a single play like that. And Patrick Mahomes made his play. Later on in the game, we saw Jimmy Garoppolo miss a overthrow his receiver who had beaten the defense, that would have been a touchdown. That would have ended the game, but he missed it. So one of these young quarterbacks made all the plays they needed to make. The other one didn't. That's not the only difference in the game, but that's one of the stark differences. That's why Patrick Mahomes is the chosen one. He didn't just overcome. I mean, he overcame his inexperience. He overcame a tough 49ers pass rush and overall good defense. He overcame the Madden curse and just all of that. And now at the age of 24 years old, in just his after just his third season in the NFL, he is a Super Bowl champion, the youngest quarterback to ever win the Super Bowl MVP. The last person to hold that title was Tom Brady. So good things on the horizon for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think part of the reason why I'm not too upset about this game is just because it just seems like, you know, when the Chiefs needed to make a play, they made a play, and there's not they're just that good, and there wasn't a whole lot that the 49ers could have done about that. They had their own blown opportunities for the 49ers, and we can move on to the blame game next. But overall, I'm not too upset about it. The other thing is I'm kind of just grateful for a good season, just because I don't get to experience that a whole lot in general when it comes to the 49ers and the Kings. So.
Yeah, I also think there was a great moment where I think they were like on pretty much goal line, and Patrick Mahomes for two straight plays tried to run it in himself. Right, he had a couple of shovel options. He had the chance to just do it, but you could see in his eyes that he was like, "Bro, if I get this touchdown right now, that'll be dope." It's just like, just shovel it, just give it to somebody else and get the touchdown. Stop, don't go for the glory. And I think he circled back around, and when it came push to shove, you know, he did the things that he needed to do. But there were a couple moments where I saw it in his eyes, man. He was going for the glory. He was really like trying to be like, I want the stat line that says,
are you talking about like the first touchdown, like the first touchdown
he scored himself?
And
yeah,
that was
the first touchdown he did score
himself. That was him saying, I'm the chosen one. I am the chosen one.
No, there was, but it was, I think it was the one that would have put them in position to tie the game, or close to tying the game, and they were on goal line, and it was just like, I just saw him. He tried so hard just to run a man over, and I was just like, "Oh, Patrick, don't do this. Don't go for the glory when you can take the win."
Yeah, that's the thing, though. He eventually settled down and made the right decisions, and so you do that.
Because there was a pretty scary one where he went for it and the ball got knocked out, but luckily it just kept going out of bounds.
Oh yes, yeah.
But I also, the thing I loved about that one was it was in the middle of me telling somebody that, like, Patrick Mahomes looks small, but he's stronger than you think. And on that play, the guy who hit him had to take a minute. And it was just like, well, yeah, there you go. All right. So some other things to talk about from this Super Bowl win. One of the big things I think to also talk about, rather than just Patrick Mahomes, is this is Andy Reid finally winning a Super Bowl. One of the most, I think, beloved coaches in the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah. He's kind of reached meme status. Mm-hmm. Some of it is just for his size. And so like people make fun of his weight and his eating habits and all that. I mean, he's just been around for so long. This is his 21st season as a head coach. You know, now that I think about it, that's like almost as long as I've been watching football, period. When he originally took over the Eagles, he had Donovan McNabb for so many years. He helped his development into a great player. And then he had Michael Vick, post-prison Michael Vick, turned him into an MVP candidate. And then a couple rough years, eventually lost his job there, and then and then came to Kansas City. I don't want to say he resurrected Alex Smith's career, but he helped continue the Alex Smith's resurgence after he had some good years under Jim Harbaugh. And then now Patrick Mahomes. So he's always kind of been seen as kind of a quarterback whisperer.
Considered by many to be maybe the best offensive coach of the modern era of football, including some of his assistants, as it says here. Two of his former assistants have won Super Bowls as well.
John Harbaugh and I forget who the other one is, but
I believe that would be Doug Peterson.
Oh, yes, Doug Peterson, for his former team in Philadelphia. So it's just kind of been rough just because everybody respects him as a head coach. Everybody knows he's a good head coach, but he hasn't been able to win the biggest achievement in football yet. And so now he's finally done it.
The other weird stat line coming out of this for me. So this was his 222nd win.
Yep.
As a head coach, and it happened on depending on your number formatting, 2/2/2020.
Yeah, I don't want to go full Kobe with the numerology here, but so we won't. But it's nice for him to finally get this win after 15 postseason appearances. The other thing is both of these teams have a lot of assistant coaches that probably should be hired by other teams. And we talked about Eric Bieniemy. It's not just that he's Patrick Mahomes's offensive coordinator. He is Andy Reid's offensive coordinator as well. And so Andy Reid is at the level where, his assistants should all be at the top of everybody's coaching lists. So, DJM is hoping that the Lions get him after Matt Patricia is fired. So that would be really nice. Eric Bieniemy deserves a coaching job somewhere. He's achieved the highest that he can achieve as an offensive coordinator in Kansas City. So time for a new challenge for him.
So moving on from the praise, it's time to play the blame game. I think I will kind of let JVZ, being a 49ers fan, kind of take the reins on this one. But so the Chiefs scored 21 points in the fourth quarter to come back from a 10-point deficit. Who are you blaming, JVZ?
It's tough because I didn't want to, I don't want to get too deep into this, but I kind of couldn't help it. Well, I made the mistake of listening to sports radio around here the last couple of days. the narrative around Kyle Shanahan, obviously he's a very good offensive mind. He was the offensive coordinator for the Falcons a couple of years ago when they blew the 28-3 lead against the Patriots. So he got a lot of blame there for not running the ball as much, not running the clock out as much. And so this year he had a 10-point lead. Now as the head coach of his own team, he had a 10-point lead and blew that lead as well. So I think people want to find patterns in that. I don't know if him running the ball more would have helped, because by the time the Chiefs took the lead, there was still like a minute and a half left on the clock. When the Chiefs score, they score quick, and they only had 10 points to come back from. They've had bigger leads just in the playoffs this year that they've come back from, and they've done it faster. So I I don't know if, you know, trying to play super conservative would have helped that much. I think if you want to say that the Niners were doing really well at running the ball and averaging 7 yards a carry, so they should have done that more, I think that's a fair criticism. But again, you know, one or two plays goes in the other way, then we might be talking about a completely different result.
Yeah. So, and I always think, at least from the coaching aspect, right? Like, the whole thing is to get your players to put points on the board, right? The more points you have on the board, the harder it is for the other team to do those things, right? To make those comebacks. And I don't think at any point, especially in those first three quarters where I was watching the game and the 49ers took the lead, I think they took the points that were legitimately given to them. Yeah. Obviously there were some missed plays and some miscues, but I think for the majority of it, they had some good control of the ball. And I don't think they started out making that many mistakes, but I think in that haste of understanding who they're up against and trying to put points on the board, they did make some mistakes. But I really think the mistakes were minimal, at least on the 49ers side.
Yeah, I can't point to any one particular play and say, like, they should have called something different, or, like, why would you throw the ball there instead of running, or anything like that. I think in Super Bowls past, we've been able to point to some plays like that, like the Patriots trying to throw the ball from the 1 yard line instead of just running it in. Like the there can be like obvious plays like that, but I think overall, I think it was a well called game by Kyle Shanahan that maybe the players just didn't execute quite so well, or maybe the Kansas City Chiefs defense just really came out to play in the fourth quarter and took that game. Yeah. Like the things that the 49ers defense did well in the first three quarters, the Kansas City Chiefs defense did equally well in the fourth quarter when it mattered the most. So, I think we want to blame people on the 49ers side, because maybe we have more control over those people, even though we don't really have any control at all. But I think the Chiefs just came out to play and they took this game when, and they did have to snatch it from the 49ers, but they did reach out and snatch it.
I think maybe the biggest mistake was the misread on the run play by the Chiefs that put them down 31, because they were only down four, because it was 20-24, right?
Their scoring play to take the lead, they were down by four, so they had to go for a touchdown. No, they were down by three, and then the 49ers were down by four after that. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think the misread on them, on the 49ers misreading the play and letting the running back break for I think it was 40 yards. I think that is their most glaring mistake, because this game essentially could have just been 20-24, right? And it doesn't look as bad as 31-20 does. But I think that's probably their biggest mistake.
Yeah. Overall, I think it was just a good game played by both teams, and team just happened to play it better.
So then going from there, right, we're not going to blame Kyle Shanahan. We're not necessarily going to blame the defense. Do we? Do we blame Jimmy G? Is he too young? Is it not his time?
Yeah, I will say that.
Do we go for Tom
Jimmy
Brady?
Garoppolo's
bring
28,
Brady.
Guys.
Put him on
He's
the bench.
Garoppolo's 28.
I'm
playing devil's advocate here,
DJ. He did spend a long time as Tom Brady's backup. He is getting paid a lot of money to be the quarterback, not just of the future, but of the present for the 49ers. Mm-hmm. He's been shaky all year. But that's come with some good and some bad. Not, you know, we're not talking Jameis Winston levels, but we're talking, you know, he might throw for, you know, four touchdowns a game and two interceptions instead of three touchdowns, three interceptions. Sometimes he makes some throws where you're kind of scratching your head, or, you know, you're thanking your lucky stars that, that throw that he threw straight at the defense didn't get intercepted. But overall, I think he's done a pretty good job this year. And in this game, he made a few mistakes, and I think those just happened to be very costly mistakes that I think against a worse team, against maybe any other team in the league except for the Baltimore Ravens or the Seattle Seahawks, the 49ers would have gotten away with it. But against what is now the best team in the league, the Chiefs, those mistakes ended up being the difference, I think. So if you have to assign blame to somebody, I would probably assign it to him, but I'm not assigning it that strongly. I know there's kind of the Super Bowl losers curse where the team can't recover from it. And then they come back the next year and do terrible. I don't expect that to happen this year. The 49ers are returning most of these players, and most of their coaching staff. So the one thing this year, they're not going to catch anybody off guard like they managed to do for the first half of the season. They're not going to surprise anybody this year. They are defending NFC champions. So there's going to be a lot of film on this defense. Teams are going to be ready for them. So it's going to be harder, but I don't know. I think they definitely overachieved this year, but I think next year I'm hoping they can just achieve.
So a little bit of a odd celebration, I guess I'll call it, to throw in the odds and ends here. Derek Nida? Nada?
Nandi. Paid all adoption fees at the Kansas City Pet Project shelter. To celebrate. The story comes from our friend, the Reverend Puck. The Pet Project, I don't know how many animals they currently have, but they service over 10,000 animals a year. So Nandi has been, I think every time they've won this year, he's donated for at least one pet adoption fee. So to celebrate winning the biggest game of the year, he just said every animal who's currently at the shelter now, if you want to adopt them, you don't have to pay any fees. Just take them home.
Yeah.
So obviously a cause that's very dear to Derek Nandi's heart. But I just love these stories about I'm so happy that something happened for my insignificant sports team. I'm so happy about this one thing that I'm going to do something very significant elsewhere and donate to a good cause.
Yeah. No, I mean, in all of the like kind of weird celebration things we read, this one, it caught me by surprise, but it also was just like, I don't know. It caught me by surprise in a really good way, I think. Right. Like you hear about people kind of doing really good things, in sports for people, like when they win or just whatever. But this was kind of just one of those that like I guess unless you really know the person and the player, was just kind of surprising, but just in such a really good way that I just didn't know what to say about. I still don't know what to say about it. It's just awesome.
I think we talk a lot of bad stories about the NFL. Yeah. We've been very hard on them the last couple of years. So I always like good stories like this. So congratulations to Derek Nandi for the Super Bowl win, and thank you for donating to a good cause that is important to you.
Yeah. All right, moving on from there.
To the future.
to the future. This has kind of been a really heatedly debated topic. This one comes to us from our friend Chimera. So the NFLPA has put into proposition a vote for a 17-game season. We don't necessarily know where this game goes, I guess, at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's just... I mean, for it's been such a non-starter for so long. The NFL Players Association is just always very concerned about safety. You know, the less contact practices, like, you know, just trying to limit the potential for their players to get injured because their contracts are not guaranteed. And so when their guys get injured, they can get cut at any time. And so that's... So much of how things play out in the NFL is based off of just that thing. So like anything that involves them playing more has been such a non-starter. So like proposals for 18 game seasons have been shut down. Proposals for, in this case, a 17 game season they've refused to even acknowledge them until now. But what's bringing them to the table here is that they might get a lot of concessions in return. I think this is being phrased by ESPN they're willing to consider the one thing that they've absolutely refused to consider before in favor of 10 things that they want. So, the GM is calling out one of them being the weed, which is the removal of marijuana penalties and just the shifting of fine amounts in general to just more in the player's favor. Greater spending minimums for clubs. I think currently they have to spend like 90% of the salary cap to hit the salary floor. So that might end up being raised. Some potential revenue bumps if they play a 17th game, then everybody's salaries will get scaled up accordingly. And that scale up might actually happen early, maybe the year before the 17 game format starts. There's also the potential for another playoff game getting added to the mix. So I don't know if that's going to actually restructure, like maybe they do 7 teams make the playoffs instead of 6. And then shortening the preseason so that, you know, having an extra game in the middle in the regular season, maybe you can offset that by playing less in the preseason. Better benefits for retired players so that once players are done with the grueling physical aspect of the game, they have better health care and more money to be able to take care of themselves afterwards. So I think those are all things that the NFL Players Association have wanted for a long time and have tried to negotiate for. They might have to make a concession on the one issue that they've refused to consider. But maybe if that gets them a lot of the things they want, maybe it's worth it.
Yeah, like I said, this has kind of been a highly debated topic on a lot of the media outlets, and I'm one that I think when you come to certain discussions, certain business discussions, sometimes I don't like when people try to buy their way through a discussion. Right? To a certain extent, these are all good things, but it is a little bit in the disguise of getting that 17th game for the NFL to be able to make more money, right? And
well, keep in mind, the players will make more money too.
Which is what I was going to say, right? Like, and the good thing is the possibility of the NFL spreading that money out. I don't really still know where I fall on this. I've been trying to keep up with this as much as I can, but it's really hard with a lot of the media spin that's happening, because like you said, right, so a lot of the players unions and people who kind of speak on their behalf tote the injury factors of these things, and you know, the possibility of guys shortening their career. And I think it tries to sell you, in a sense, in its media spin, that it's like it's one more game, right? It's the regular season is 16 games. This would be one more game. And you go, okay, so maybe we start the season earlier, like you said, and we take away a preseason game. But then it's like, okay, it's one more game now. And then what about in another 5 years? Do we then once again come to this thing where it's like, well, you know, we got 17 and everybody's fine. What's one more game? You know, I just don't want to see it turn into that in the long run. I don't want to see this kind of become this nickel and dime where they dance things out in front of the players union and in front of the players and in front of fans, and like, hey, you know, we're all about safety. We're all about this. And, you know, this is just one more game for you guys to be able to enjoy and for these guys to be able to make more money. But then 5 years from now, we're sitting in a space where they think we forgot, and they go, hey, what if we just added one more game?
Yeah. Yeah. What about the proposal that every player is only allowed to play in 16 games a season, but the team has to play 17 games? So you got to figure out when players get their rest game and strategically manage it throughout the season. I've heard that idea thrown around before. I think that's essentially load management, which is where the NBA is, and fans don't like that, but that's also an 82 game season instead of a 16 game one.
It's weirder in football, right? I feel like in the NBA, I wish that was almost kind of a mandate that players could only play so many games a year until the playoffs, throughout the season, because then I think and that gets into another topic, but I think that is a discussion that should happen more on that side. I think fans should embrace load management in the NBA. I think here it's a little weirder because you play one game a week. Yeah, it is a very tough physical game.
The NFL hasn't lost the idea that every single game is important. And the NBA has lost that. Hockey's kind of lost that as well. And they play the same amount of games. Baseball's definitely lost that. The NBA still has that. So I do think, like, the more you add, the more you run the risk, but I feel like they're trying to milk it for all it's worth. At least while the NFL is still on top as not just the top sport in America, but the clear-cut top sport in America by far. 100 million people watched the Super Bowl this past Sunday, and nothing else gets those kind of numbers. So if they can add one more week to the season, they're going to want to do that. I do fully expect that once they add the 17th game, they are going to want the 18th game. But maybe when they get that 18th game, the players can get 10 more concessions that they've been asking for. So it is all a negotiation, each side is going to try to stick up for themselves. And so we will have to wait and see where this leads.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind one more week of fantasy football.
Look, any more weeks where I can lose, just I don't need in my life. So 16 is fine with me.
Okay. All right. Thank you all for listening to the show. That's the end of the show this week. Head on over to sportsoddsandends.com to get our show notes, which will have links to all of these stories. Head on over to patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to contribute financially to the show. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, I'm at JVZ. Kaz is at King Kaz. DJM is at Call Me DJM. Send us a voice message if you want to call in like Petey did to the show. Thank you all. We'll see you next time.
An extra week of Lions football. Yay!
Well, what if it's Lions football with Eric Bieniemy as the head coach?
I get Tua as the quarterback.